When I'm not hosting this podcast, I am writing books, but it is really hard for me to write when I'm at home, so I like to find remote cabins in the middle of nowhere to just hang out and write. But I hate the idea of my house just sitting empty, doing nothing but collecting dust and definitely not collecting checks. And that's why I'm an Airbnb host. It's one of my all-time favorite side hustles. Other popular side hustles are awesome too, don't get me wrong, but they often involve big startup costs. By hosting your space, you're monetizing what you already have access to. It doesn't get easier than that. And if you're new to the side hustle game and you're anxious about getting started, don't worry because you're not in this alone. Airbnb makes it super easy to host. I mean, if I could do it, you could do it. And your home might be worth a lot more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I'm Nicole Lappin, the only financial expert you don't need a dictionary to understand. It's time for some money rehab. Today marks the one-year anniversary of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And today, I'm talking with someone who was actually there in Ukraine when the war broke out, Max Chmerkovsky. Before February 2022, Max was known as a Ukrainian-born fan favorite, Dancing with the Stars alum. But when he was stuck in Ukraine following the breakout of the war, he became the window into the conflict for many of us in America. And inadvertently, he also became the focus of complicated conversations at the intersection of privilege and conflict. Conversations that he has used for good. Here's our conversation. Welcome to Money Rehab.
Thank you.
On this anniversary, can you believe that this has been a year?
No, I cannot.
For those who don't know, you were in Ukraine filming, right, when the invasion happened. So what can you tell us about what February 24th was like?
Terrifying. It was terrifying. It was 5 a.m. My friend called. My phone is like off the hook. So I got up, I looked down. It's like 5 in the morning. My friend in Kiev tells me, so just pack your bags, just chill, be very calm. I'm like, what are you talking about? It's like, the war has begun, but just be calm. Like, I'm just, I get the chill still. It was the war has begun. And I was like, oh my God. And then it was stress that I kind of never felt before in a way of like, you know, I'm all about the body and sort of the way things happen natural and react. Like I had this, I don't want to say it, but like I've never smelled myself in my life ever. And it was like, I was there for 8 days before I was able to take a train ride out. And I remember through it all, I'm like, oh my God, I'm just under so much stress. It's insane. So that's how it felt the whole time. But outside of that, it was just stressful because for the first time, so I travel all the time. I can always come home. I can always come home, no matter what. I don't have a plane ticket. Here's a credit card. Here's a ticket, something else. I'm always come home. I could not come home. This was the most terrifying realization that when I realized I just can't get out. I can get out, but it's not guaranteed. You'll be on the road to Poland from Kiev, which you usually takes like 10 hours, 11 hours or something. People standing there for where it was like 2.5 days,
oh my God,
running out of gas, starting to walk. Some people on the side of the road laying down, just freezing. It was just insane. There was shooting. There was like checkpoints. I mean, it just got really out of hand. So that situation, the stress with not being able to get out, with the fact that it's not, aggressive behavior. This is a full out war, like World War II, like history book stuff. I ended up in a situation in hindsight that was very safe. I was with a group of people that were, part of media, and I was in a hotel, but I was in a space that was kind of like Switzerland in the middle of Kiev, where all the international media would have been. But then I realized I'm a block away from Zelensky's office where all of this is coming to, so I really need to go. And the day that I actually made my move to the train station and got out was when I started to get, I had new contacts that I made, like all these like ex-Mossad and CIA, ex-CIA operatives that were working with these sort of like, they were like now for hire kind of like people, the guides within that situation. And so they were all texting me like, you need to go tonight, like right now. And so when that started coming in, I'm like, okay, I got to get out.
It sounds like those days were just full of adrenaline.
Oh
like-
my God. It's one thing. We all know somebody who is an active soldier, or you know your uncle or cousin or whatever, military, you know, duty, off duty type of situation. I have never met until then a soldier who's in the middle of the war. It's a completely different person. They have the different look in their eyes. They're there for a completely different reason. And I am none of those people. You, me, him, we are not that person. I had an amazing relationship with those people. I've gotten back to Ukraine through TV opportunities 11 years ago. You know, I rekindled. I was a 14-year-old that left the country that I was not sure where we're going. I did not have a great time, you know, getting into the United States lifestyle. My brother was 8. He kind of like jumped in and here he was. I remember 9 months later, I still don't speak English. I'm 15 now. I'm a teenager. I'm 6'1" already. You know what I mean? Like, so I already stand out, but I can't open my mouth. I'm in the back of the class. I have no confidence. I literally haven't spoken until Dancing with the Stars. So, you know, all of those things happen. And I now in my mid-20s, realizing that maybe I also have a problem with the fact that, you know, what is my heritage? Where am I from? Where are my roots? You know what I mean? So things like that. So Ukraine for me, through Dancing with the Stars, and then the opportunities on TV, and then I started coming back and I started realizing these are my people, closer to than some of the immigrant, you know, generation that I grew up with, because we were from everywhere, you know? But this is where I'm from. And so it feels very kind of very, you know, personal to me, right? So now we're talking a decade of relationship building, of having, you know, friendships that are on this level. And when the war started, I was there for about 6 months or 7 months before that, filming Dancing with the Stars. I was a judge on Dancing with the Stars, so that's a live show. Once a week for like 14 weeks, you know, so I spend a lot of time in Kyiv, a lot of time in Ukraine in general. So now I'm having all of these relationships, all these TV relationships, TV friendships, and I'm seeing these dancers that I just judged on Dancing with the Stars at front line. And I'm like, I can't put that together. And so, you know, I feel like, but I'm also part of that same group of people. You know, so that was the, you know, confusion for me and inside of me. And I needed to deal with that. And I dealt with it on my own. Like, it's time multiplied by keep looking at the what's in front of you. The closest to me is my 6-year-old, my wife. And that's it.
And just to clarify, you mean the people you were working with on TV there, all the men had to get called up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For
yeah.
duty.
So that's what I mean. Yeah.
So you were one of the few men on the train, or if the only men on the train out.
Oh, my God. I was so I had that realization when I got on train, and the way I got on it, again, they just literally shoved the it was me and maybe like two other people with different passports, right? So we were three or four of those, and they're like, go. And they kind of like shoved us in, which we got in. And I remember it was like a tiny train wagons that designed for like maybe 30 people. And the guy that walked in, he's like, I'm going to have 130 heads in this wagon. I was like, I'm like, where are they going to go? There was 132 people when it was said and done. And it looked like the zombie run, the only thing I can compare it to. The whole thing was shaking. People were let in to run. If you make it, you make it. You know. So this is a long conversation because a lot of stuff happened. The moms losing their kids, the getting separated, the fact that there was me and maybe like another guy around, you know, on the other side of the train, and I was judging the entire train ride, 27 hours. I was like, this guy is inside the train and on the bed, and I had taken my backpack, put myself in between the wagons. So I was like, you know, like a freezing temperature. So the ladies would like, hey, come on in. I would be let in, you know, the pass me sandwiches, stuff like that, eating the sandwich, stand there, and they like walk back out because there was literally no room to lay down on the floor, to sit, nothing. So, you know, just a lot of that stuff. And it's just PTSD, and it's just a traumatic experience.
Well, you've talked about the PTSD for when you left Ukraine. I'm sure that that was all triggered last year.
Yeah. And it was triggered last night, to be honest with you. Like yesterday I was sitting and, you know, just texting my friends, very small group of people, you know, and I'm like, and I didn't understand why. And I felt like I needed to let this out. I'm like, listen, I'm sorry, but you guys are going to be it. It's the 1 year anniversary. For me, it's just unfathomable that we're still sitting here because my communication is, again, I have few friends, not speaking for the whole Ukraine, but the few friends that are actively right there in, what is it, like line zero type of stuff, you know, going in and out. Some are coming, some are able to come back and have communication. Some I haven't spoken to in months. You know, it's the reality. And I'm like, there is a generation of people that are getting hurt, you know, that are dying, that are getting affected. And this is unfair.
You've done so much work to do what you could, your own part. You went to Poland to help with aid efforts. You started the organization for tons of aid to Ukraine. You helped build homes for displaced families. You started a mobile app, right?
Not
for
enough.
Emergency.
It's not enough, you know, and it, because it's so, first of all, thank you, but it's not for that. This wasn't it, you know. I support nonprofits for the last decade and a half the best way that I can, and I do it as much as I can. This was not our profession. So we started it because it was like we all felt terrible and, you know, teary-eyed and, you know, emotional. But in the process, we're learning the negatives of it all too, you know, how hard it is, you know, to continue. First of all, how hard it is. But like, look at the times that we live in. And at that time, I'm supposed to go out and try to, you know, get people to donate the little bits here and there just so that we can build that house. And, you know, so I believe in doing all you can, do your best, do what you can. Gladly will lend my hand to whoever's listening and have a nonprofit or have some kind of fundraiser. Hit me up, you know,
DM.
I'll DM me, I'll post about it, you know, but it, you know, the problem is nowadays is so much, you know, there's so much nasty stuff going on as well. You know, people try to benefit even on warfare. So that's why I try to stick to very reliable sources. And for example, you know, Bethany Frankel is somebody I'm close with. She hooked me up with Michael Capone, who runs a nonprofit called Global Empowerment Missions. Talk about somebody who got hundreds of millions of dollars immediately, you know, dedicated and continue to support. Like, I mean, it's just pushing massive amounts of humanitarian aid. You know, I believe in organizations like that that do massive things, that use their financial know-how to build infrastructure that actually makes a difference on a level that you can feel. $200 million, you can feel it. A couple of thousand, not sure. We did a big thing in the very beginning, 100%. We pulled off unreasonable numbers of humanitarian aid collected by volunteers in Fort Lee, New Jersey.
Like 500,000 pounds or something of aid.
More. It just keeps going. We already stopped it a long time ago, but we keep shipping. You know,
so you don't think every little bit matters?
Of course it does. Of course it
does.
And
what would you say? So if somebody's listening and wants to help, what would your message be?
Give money somewhere, somebody else. Don't do it yourself. You're going to waste money. Just do your research. Don't put it into like, you know, I there were some A-list celebrities that started doing fundraisers through some kind of like, you know, fundraising platforms. Let's just be vague about this.
Okay.
You know, and so you put together $42 million and you don't know that 18% goes away before you even blink.
To the overhead.
And why would you want to do that? Why would you want to raise so much money only to give away such a big chunk? Like, I don't get it. So, you know, it's just, you're actually financing more of that stuff to be out there.
Well, I think anything you do with your money is a vote.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you know, I'm single issue voter on this thing. I just want Ukraine to survive, stand its ground, get its territory back, and it will prove to the U.S. consumer that this friend that you just gained in Eastern Europe central most powerful army today, I mean, you need that friend. And it's not world policing. It's just making correct relationships. They speak your language. They're the same people you hire and outsource, you know, for your finances and, you know, website building and marketing needs and YouTube, you know, whatever it is, monetization. Those are the Ukrainians. Like, they're the front of most of the things. So you're going to see what that partnership is like. And so I can't wait for that type of win for Ukraine, because Ukraine cannot wait to give back. This is the person that I think they are.
The country.
As a country, yeah, 100%. And so there. That's why it's going to be a beautiful place to visit, to see, to be a part of, to have a relationship with. And as an American, I think we're going to earn the right to be welcomed into this country and be like, you know, thank you. Thank you for what this support was and how it was and, you know, what it did.
Hold on to your wallets. Money Rehab will be right back. Money Rehabbers, you have money hidden in your house. Yeah, just hiding there in plain sight. Okay, so I don't mean you have gold bars hidden somewhere in walls, treasure map style, but you do have a money-making opportunity that you're just leaving on the table if you're not hosting on Airbnb. It's one of my all-time favorite side hustles. By hosting your space, you are monetizing what you already own. It doesn't get easier than that. For me, hosting on Airbnb has always been a no-brainer. When I first signed up, I remember thinking to myself, self, you pay a lot of money for your house. It is time that house returned the favor. And to get real with you for a sec, I felt so much guilt before treating myself on vacation because traveling can be so expensive. But since hosting on Airbnb, I feel zero stress for treating myself to a much needed vacation, because having Airbnb guests stay at my house when I'm traveling helps offset the cost of my travel. So it's such a win-win. I mean, if I could do it, you could do it. And your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Money Rehabbers, I gotta tell you, I just got back from Industrious and I am obsessed. Industrious is a company that provides co-working spaces and flexible office solutions for modern businesses, entrepreneurs, and remote employees who don't just want to work from the bedroom. I live in LA, as you know, and I travel a ton. And when I do, I always worry about finding a good place to work with a strong Wi-Fi connection and a legit desk situation. Industrious has a ton of different locations in major cities, so it really gives me the peace of mind that I have a home away from home when it comes to getting stuff done. But when I am at home, I love the Westwood location's floor-to-ceiling windows. It just makes you feel like you're on top of the world, which is definitely the vibe you want when you're trying to take over the world. I also love the telephone booths they have that allow you to take private calls there, but also if you have a Zoom, there's a ring light, because Zooms are always better that way. We know this. Go to industriousoffice.com, click join now, and use the code MONEYREHAB to redeem a whole free week of co-working when you take a tour. A whole free week. Free. It's my favorite price. And now for some more Money Rehab. What a stud that Zelensky, man.
What a stud. He's a great guy. You know that show that he came?
I know. Tell me more about it.
This guy is a comedian.
I didn't know that.
Straight up, he's a comedian. And some time ago, he's just a comedian doing his thing. And then he's becoming a prominent comedian. And obviously somebody who, you know, has a bit know-how, you know, in business and all that. So he starts his own production company and, you know, he created a comedy network, like something like an SNL, you know what I mean? Like one of those like Saturday Night Live type of situations.
Like where variety shows.
Yeah, variety show where everybody comes in, all the comedians. And then so his production company is popping off. So then he's entered, you know, the movie sphere. And then this reality, not reality, that this TV series comes out where he's called Sluga Naroda, People's servant of people, of the people, or whatever it is, which by the way is the name of this political party, the exact same name. And so he created this show, the sitcom, where he's a starting character and he's a regular person who just by accident somehow gets, I didn't watch the show, who gets elected to be the president just out of nowhere. Somehow it just happened in the midst of the Ukrainian nonsense on the political level since the 90s, where it was just a lot of finances into pro-Russian bullshit politics on that government level. The people in Ukraine, when there was a poll, were asked, who is your ideal president? And they said, this freaking guy.
That's amazing.
And they called him by his whatever stage name. That guy is my president. this is who I want in my office. This is who I want to come from, like where that my president to come from. I don't want a president like the guy that was at some point when I was there shooting Bachelor and he was building in a broke country. He was building a helipad for $100 million smack in the middle of the Kiev. And I'm like, that's not the president you want.
So this would be like the West Wing president.
Right. But there was the first time on the television. It's a big hit. Everybody's watching. They're like, that's who I want as my president. He won by a landslide. No questions asked. That's the dude. And this, and you can find dirt and he's getting, you know, I'm sure put a dossier on, you know what I'm saying? You know how it is, the opposition and all this stuff. Oh, you know, it's a money laundering and this and the other. Look, the reality is that this dude is for a year in freaking office, you know what I'm saying? With a target on his back by some of the most powerful, you know, I look at Putin like the worst, horrible, bad guy in a 007 movie that's ever been created. Like this is just a movie we're watching. You could say what you want, but this dude 2 minutes ago was just me and you and somebody else on TV trying to create a successful podcast.
No, he was like you. I'm actually seeing some stark similarities here. So he was on a popular show. Hold on. And people loved him. He was beloved.
Look, I'm going to tell it right now. I will never run for political office.
I was going to say.
Never say never, but don't do
that.
So no,
Chmerovsky?
In my...
Prime Minister.
Look.
Nothing.
I'm going to say it right now. In my life, most of the stuff that I said I will never do, like dancing, I swear to God, I was going for chemistry and bio. That's it. I was going to be a pharmacist. I care nothing about dance. I sucked at dance. It was not my thing. I did not like it. I also didn't want to smile and do the cha-cha. I was terrified. We can talk about my childhood and all that. I wanted to do chemistry and biology.
Sure.
That's
it. And then you did dancing. And now because you don't want to do politics.
Because I said I will never do it. Exactly. No, I'm never doing politics. Stop it.
100%.
No way. 1,000 million.
Your wife is pregnant. As she's calling, I'm just like, is it time? When is she to actually do?
Later. We're halfway through.
Okay.
You know, we're lucky with this one.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
I'm so excited for you guys. I read how difficult the fertility journey has been. Do you think some of that was contributed to you by the stress of Ukraine?
She went to visit me in October in Kiev, and we got pregnant in Kiev. We got pregnant and had another miscarriage shortly after. It was terrible. And so she lost that one too.
Sorry.
So it was like, it wasn't about, no, I mean, it was again, it was, I think, fourth, third at that time.
Miscarriage.
Yeah. Then we had decided, Peter decided that she wanted to do an IVF and it didn't work. And to watch her, you know, having made that IVF decision and be public about it, and how beautiful it was, the processes of it, you know, and watching her be sort of like content, like this is obviously a sure thing. And then it didn't work. It was the most devastating ever. And so what happened? She had the news on Monday, picked up the phone, had the horrible 24 hours, picked up the phone, called the, you know, casting director, who I'll always be grateful for that alone. Not even the last 20 years, but for that alone. And she's like, I want my job back. She's like, you're in. On Thursday, she met her partner, was on Dancing with the Stars. And 4 weeks later, we got pregnant. Didn't even know about it. So it's again, like, you know, when you chill and you calm and you happy, you know, beautiful things happen.
So the stress of Ukraine didn't affect your relationship?
Of course it did. I mean, she spent like, you know, the whole time I was there, she was on the couch. I don't think she slept for like 8 days. It did. We were stressed. The miscarriages happened. There was another one that happened over the summer through this process. I mean, it was just nonsense. We are now slowly coming out of some of the most stressful years that I've ever had. And it was years. I mean, again, for probably everybody, but damn, you need stamina.
And you have it.
I think immigration like really reinforces a lot of things and it gives you that opportunity to kind of probably turn the other cheek to some of the life stuff.
Let's talk about when the conflict ends, because
right.
I'm hopeful.
Yes.
It will. Will you go back? Will you take your kids
back?
Can
I wait?
Okay.
Can I wait? So I can't wait. I would have gone back already. I one of my friends back and forth in the front. We had actually plans for a show. He's a TV personality as well. And we had a project in the works that we started right as it all happened. And, you know, I can't wait to get back to that. I can't wait to get back to, you know, my Dancing with the Stars, to, you know, world of dance families. I can't, you know, the some of the people that I met to work with, the producers, the directors, the stagehands, the camera guys. I mean, you know, the dancing in that place is just, you know, that we always attach art to something that you go through on a personal level. Can you imagine art coming out of that place?
Yeah. Art imitating that life,
you know. Ooh. or just art driven by real emotions. You know, and I'm not saying US is all that. I am in love with this place. This is home. This is forever home, and I'm grateful to this country. It's not a freaking promotion. I'm telling you this is how I feel, because, and people who ever say anything against this place, go to anywhere else on the planet. I promise, anywhere on the planet, no matter how beautiful it is. You know, there's this joke, it's a long joke, but the punchline is, don't confuse vacation with immigration. The tools and opportunities that this place gives you, I'm a forever advocate.
So if you look back at the year, what a crazy year it's been. Do you have a few like summary words that you would describe what that experience is like now that you've done all this work and have this perspective?
That was the most, you know, to avoid cliché, most growth I've probably ever had in one calendar year. Again, we did go through a lot of stuff as a family, and, you know, personally, I went through a lot of things that maybe most of the people don't get to. I learned also how to appreciate what you have, you know, because we just say it. We're some TikTokable, you know, hashtag, you know, popular hashtag. But the reality is, you know, this year just showed also what kind of people that there are. And I'm going to have to give this homage to the Ukrainians, you know, and I'm not saying that they're only once, but I'm saying that that's an example. And I think it's going to go a long way, you know, for the rest of the world, like looking in, like, wait a minute, it ain't about the size, you know, geographically, you know, it's about the what's on the inside. To be fair, did any of us know what kind of warfare can there be nowadays? No, we didn't. Now we're looking at the most warfare there can possibly be. So if that's what it is, and what's required is a lot of money, but, you know, and a lot of bit of heart, because US, nobody would have been helping that place, regardless of where it is geographically, if the people didn't stand up.
Yeah, what Ukraine lacks in money, they make up in heart, for sure.
Well, we wouldn't have invested. The entire world is investing. It's a bad, dirty word, but you know, we're here, and that's all it is. People are investing. You asked me before, what is it like when Ukraine wins? It's a center of the economic boom. It's definitely the most desirable geographical location on earth to be a part of. You asking me if I want to come back? Hell yeah, I want to come back. I want to be part of the rebuild. I want to be part of, you know, use me, take, you know, whatever you need me to do, I'm here.
Listen, I'm allergic to cliches normally, but if growth is a cliche, then sign me up for that one.
For sure.
And also appreciate, I mean, if we use our finance lens, because that's where we're at right now, if you appreciate, then it appreciates and it grows, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, you appreciate and it appreciates. Okay. Yeah.
Money Rehab is a production of Money News Network. I'm your host, Nicole Lappin. Money Rehab's executive producer is Morgan Lavoie. Our researcher is Emily Holmes. Do you need some money rehab? And let's be honest, we all do. So email us your money questions, moneyrehab@moneynewsnetwork.com, to potentially have your questions answered on the show or even have a one-on-one intervention with me. And follow us on Instagram @moneynews and TikTok @moneynewsnetwork for exclusive video content. And lastly, thank you. No, seriously, thank you. Thank you for listening and for investing in yourself, which is the most important investment you can make.